follow.
Absolutely.
The voice of the Mavericks, our one true basketball buddy. Hi, Mark.
Hi, big buddies. How are y'all?
We're good,
man. We're good.
Good.
You ready for tonight?
I am. Extraordinary timing because, you know, we have a 6:30 game tonight on Valley Sports Southwest, which is 6:30 because obviously it's on another network tonight, which I'm sure will make quite a few people happy that they'll have the option to see the game. So I have miraculously timed it where I literally just parked here in the Lexus parking garage at the arena, and I'm waiting to talk to you guys and then go inside for the game tonight.
Oh, you get preferred parking, huh?
He didn't have to park that? Back there where TC parks.
Good for you, man.
Back by Jimmy John's.
That's awesome.
Thank goodness. Yeah, thank goodness.
So did you hear our Brooklyn conversation?
I did, and I would love to weigh in on that. And then I have something else I actually brought to the table from an earlier discussion this week, if you don't mind.
Good. Please do.
As far as Brooklyn goes, I'm on the Bob side of the fence on this one, and I'll tell you why. Jake brought this to my attention many, many years ago, that the pathway to an NBA title, history tells us, is you've got to have a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense. And the measure that we're basing it on is offensive and defensive rating, points allowed per 100 possessions or points scored per 100 possessions.
Yes.
Well, every team every year consistently has a top 10 offense or a top 10 defense. Now, every once in a while, you get something that I would not consider an outlier. You guys would agree that being 11th in one of those categories is not an outlier, right?
True.
You're, you know, 1/10 of 1 point on your offensive rating
right.
to keep you from being 10th is not an outlier. So you would have to go all the way back to 2004 before you found a serious outlier to that theory, which is the Detroit Pistons, who were the number 2 defense, but the number 19 offense that particular year. So it just so happens that going into play tonight, the numbers that I looked up for Brooklyn are that they are indeed the number 1 offense in the NBA. However, they are the number 23 defense in the league. And so, to me, whenever it gets down to big game time in the playoffs, especially because their best players will have not played a lot together, and I heard what you guys said, and I think those guys can figure it out probably to some degree on offense. But defensively, I think there will be issues there. So if you were to ask me today, then I would say no, that history tells me that Brooklyn is not someone who's going to win a championship.
I hope you're right. I really do. I'm not rooting for teams that are assembled in that manner by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not rooting for a team where every big buyout is going to flock to their team. I mean, they're just the Lakers of the East right now. I don't want it to happen. Maybe I'm preparing myself mentally for it to happen.
It is so weird, though, because as we sit right now, the three teams with the highest odds, or best odds, I should say, to win the title are all, in their own way, a little unconvincing themselves. And even their odds are, the best one is 4-1, which is Utah.
Uh-huh.
Then 5-1 is Philly, and like 5.5-1 is Phoenix. And in every one of those cases, you'd be like, yeah, maybe, I guess, but I don't know. I'm not sure I'd bet a Big Mac on that or anything. So it's really a weird, weird year.
And I like it, though.
Oh, I like it, too, but you can even see the Lakers right now are down by the Mavericks at a 40 or 50-1 shot. It's very, very difficult to ascertain where this thing is headed all the way through the top 10 odds.
Which is kind of fun.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not typical when it comes to NBA playoff basketball. And kind of along the lines of our discussion about the Lakers last week, I guess I tend to base my judgments of the present on what's happened in the past in terms of what history tells us is the likely pathway and the usual pathway. That doesn't mean that there can't be deviations from that from time to time, but as we discussed with the Lakers last week, even though they might be able to put it together, history tells us that you don't come out of the 5-7 area of the playoffs, of the seeding in your conference, and go on a run to the finals or win a title. It's very, very infrequent. As a matter of fact, it was history when 5-seed Miami made it to the finals last year. It was obviously history when the 6-seed Rockets won a title 27 years ago, 26 years ago, whatever it was, and when the Knicks made it as an 8-seed to the finals in 99. Those are the only three non-top 4 seeds that have made it to the finals since they reconfigured the playoffs and expanded the playoffs to 8 seeds per conference in 1984.
So I saw you retweet Tim Reynolds' stat today that unless home teams finish 70-23 or better in the final 93 games, this NBA season will be the worst combined home winning percentage in league history.
Wow.
And now the Mavericks have certainly not assisted in that in any way, and but it does speak to the fact that, man, we need humans make a massive difference in those buildings.
Yes. They make a difference in the atmosphere that provides energy for the home team. And as someone, I think, correctly pointed out in one of the responses I got to that on Twitter, and I agree with this, is that there is a human element to refereeing.
Yep.
And how much? I mean, look, there's no way you can do a formula to determine this, but that impacts the calls, you would think, to some degree in some situations. I mean, I think there's a reason that for years, if I may flash back to older NBA days, people would say, well, I want Steve Jabby as the referee when I'm the road team because he's not going to be influenced by the home crowd. Or if you went even farther back than that, people would say, man, there's no referee you want more as a road team in a big game than Earl Strom.
Yeah.
He's never going to be someone who's influenced by the home crowd. So,
well, maybe,
so there's probably something to that, too.
Maybe influenced to agitate them. That was my theory on Steve Jabby is, oh, you guys are going to ask for calls, huh? Or demand calls? Well, let me show you how I deal with that by going exactly in your face. You said you had something else from an earlier conversation. Did we touch that?
Yeah, we did not touch that, as a matter of fact. And I know it's your guys' segment asking me the questions, but I thought you guys had a wonderful sports talk debate, as you do every day. But one of them particularly struck me on Monday when I was listening and nodding my head in agreement or disagreement, as you guys were both talking about it. And that is your discussion on Monday after, and we've had a big win with Miami since then, but to revisit the Sacramento game on Sunday, I thought your segment was very interesting Monday, which we got an example of, man, Bob, right? You know, you were not too angry about it, correct?
I'm trying to keep an even keel. You know this.
Yes, you are. And then we got tearing his hair out, Corby.
I can't. Yeah, I can't take the Sacramento stuff, man.
I loved the segment, and I really enjoyed it. And I kind of walked away from it with two thoughts that I wanted to share with you guys.
Please.
And it sounds like I'm trying to please both of you, my good friends. But I thought that both of you made excellent points. And point number one to Bob would be that you're exactly right, that you cannot come unglued about every loss over the course of a long season. I mean, it's just simply not a tenable situation if you're going to keep your sanity about you, especially if you're on the inside walls of the thing and you're trying to be successful as a player and trying to be successful as a coach or front office person who has to make important decisions, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of value in that. You know, nobody's going to go 72-0 over the course of this crazy season or a nice 69-3 or anything like that. That's not going to happen. So I thought that was a very good point on the Bob side of things. However, while I appreciate your even-keeled approach to it, you know, I think that as we've seen with this team this year, and particularly with games like Sunday night against Sacramento, and as somebody who loves the Mavs, but I would also be the first one to say losses and performances like that, and really performances more so than just losses, but performances like that invite and dare I say warrant scrutiny and criticism. Significant scrutiny and criticism when you judge what's at stake for you based on each and every game, understanding you're not going to win all of them. But when you look at what's at stake, when you look at what's happened when you've played this particular team, and you don't have to sit there and go back several weeks or several months, it's all happened three times in the last 2 weeks. You get a mulligan, and they messed up that first home game. Fox was really good. Barnes was really good. But then those guys aren't even playing.
Yeah.
And to go out and have a poor start against them, I mean, a horrible start on the road against them last Monday and go down 20-3 and then have another bad start and another just lethargic, malaise sort of type of performance against that same team that had beaten you twice and had beaten you the way they beat you twice. I just thought that was a very, very frustrating, disappointing loss. So while, you know, it's not any sort of reason to throw away your fandom of the team based on one game like that, I do think that there's, you know, you want people that are watching the team, that are into the team, to be engaged and be into it. So I think a loss or a performance like that, I don't have any problem with the criticism and scrutiny than something like that, within reason, warrants.
Yeah, it was another draw segment. We keep having ties, and it goes to a shootout after just about every segment.
Split
these days.
Decision, split decision, with controversy.
Yeah,
okay.
Harp was
good, man. No, I thought your guys' conversation about that was riveting radio, to be honest with you. The other day,
thank
I really
you.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you. So Harp said the other night, he was like, "Look, you know, is the team was blowing out Miami?" He's like, "Man, can you imagine talking to you in skin like?" What if they would have beaten Sacramento those three times? You're talking about the hottest team in the NBA right now, and everybody's talking about you, but, you know, it didn't work out that way, and now you're faced with a massive test tonight, and this would be not monumental. I don't want to make it too big, but knowing what you have coming up, to have this one in your back pocket would be absolutely massive.
A lot's going to be determined, I think, in the next 72 hours. Nothing's going to be decided, but there are going to be some shakedowns in the standings, some shakeups in the standings, whatever you want to call it, based on what's going to happen. Because the Lakers are playing the Clippers tonight. Mm-hmm. After Dallas gets done with Brooklyn, and of course, as we know with this team, you can take absolutely nothing for granted, but they're going to play Cleveland in two straight games after this. And then the Lakers, after playing the Clippers tonight, have to play at Portland, which is the tiebreaker game for the Lakers in Portland in terms of their head-to-head matchup. They're 1-1, so somebody's going to win the season series in that game tomorrow, and it's the Lakers playing on the road on the second night of a back-to-back, and you know, it would appear without LeBron. I think I just saw a report that he's aiming to come back for some of the regular season games next week, but I don't know that there's a specific date on that. So the Mavs are playing big games. The Lakers and Portland are playing big games. And this is all, look, this is why, to me, the play-in tournament is so great. Because it's made what would be pretty uneventful. I mean, you would be jockeying for position at 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
And it's better to finish 5 or 6. You're gonna have a better chance of winning, quite clearly, in a normal season. But that's made it of the utmost importance because of what 7 is. And as my partner said the other day, as Harp said, the scariest phrase in the NBA right now is play-in tournament. If you're on the 5, 6, 7 side of it, now if you're on the 10 side of it, play-in tournament is awesome. It's
right.
Not the scariest phrase. It's the best phrase. But if you're in the 5, 6, 7 range right now, then you know you're scared to death of that thing.
Yeah, that should be a great TV event. Last thing for you. And this is maybe a something we can set the table for next week, because I don't anticipate you have all this off the top of your head. But I was watching Brooklyn Milwaukee Sunday, and they were talking about Texas guy. I think he's a Texas guy before he went to A&M. Chris Middleton. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's from South Carolina.
He's from South Carolina. Yes, he's from North Charleston, South Carolina. That's a mouthful.
Is this guy great?
He's awesome.
Okay, so Chris Middleton went to the G League after being picked in the second round by the Pistons.
Yes.
And now he has a contract that will pay him in his final year $40 million, which I believe is the maximum he was eligible to receive, a 5-for-180 or something like that deal.
Right.
How long can that list be of guys who were in the G League signing max deals for $40 million a year? That can't be a very big list, right?
It can't be. I don't have the specific people on the list in front of me, or I've never really thought about that. But and he did play that first year with the Pistons, just from years of doing notes about him. I mean, he did play probably close to 40 games that first season with Detroit. So he was not a full-time G Leaguer. He was a part-time G Leaguer. But
the Pistons didn't think he was worthy of their roster at one point of his rookie year, right?
Yeah.
Even if it was just for a couple weeks.
They were sending him down to get playing time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
he left Detroit, by the way, after 1 year. Then he was was with Milwaukee, starting with his second year in the league, and has been there ever since, I think, since 2013.
I think in the Brandon Jennings trade, maybe.
Wow.
I figured it's a short list, but maybe we can pick this up at another time.
When you were bringing up Milwaukee, man, I thought you were going to ask me about our good buddy Jim Paschke, who's hanging him up at the end of this season.
Oh, man. Dude, he's been doing...
You didn't see that?
I guess I missed that note, but he's been doing games literally since I could turn on a TV, like when I was like 7. I've been watching him.
How old he is?
Man.
I don't know, but he's been doing Bucks TV for 35 years. And if you want to check it out, Bob, I think you would really dig this. The way it was announced was a tweet this week with about a 4 or 5 minute interview of Giannis interviewing Jim Paschke about his retirement.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really neat.
You haven't seen that?
You're not a fan. I don't know. Maybe I need to unblock the Bucks. Okay. Mark Cantwell, it was a tough bubble, but I will talk with you, or we will hear you talk to us tonight.
Yes, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Really enjoyed it as always, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Let's follow. He's awesome.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.